my fellow Americans. Major combat operations in Iraq have ended. In the Battle of Iraq, the United States and our allies have prevailed.
Silly Bush. Major combat operations have only begun here on Critical Mass Radio Network. That's right. Lock your doors, put the twins in the cellar, and hide Laura with your mother. Here comes the revolution.
Hey radio listeners, bored with bland, clear channel brand programming?
The requirement for dependable internet services.
The World Trade Center site.
Innovative electronically choreographed score to a spectacular aerial fireworks show.
Can't handle commercials?
I love the 80s, that's
only me.
Tired of repetitive radio?
World Trade Center.
There's always Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1 FM and freakradio.org. Or
Freedom Tower, as it will be called, will be the tallest skyscraper in the world when it is completed. And it will stand where the twin towers of the World Trade Center stood.
Turn off the radio! Turn off that bullshit!
Unlicensed, non-commercial, pirate radio for the Santa Cruz community and for the global community.
So real that the radio will never play it, but that's cool. The enemy's supposed to hate it.
What's on the radio? Propaganda, mind control, and turning it on. It's like putting on the blindfold, because when you bring in the real, you don't get rotation. Let you take over the station. And yeah, I know it's part of their plans. They make us think it's all about party and dancing.
I see some enemies. We'd be fooling ourselves if we had an audience this large and didn't realize that there were some enemies present.
Free Radio Santa Cruz, free speech, freedom of the press, freedom of information, free radio.
Yes, friends. We're tuned to the Critical Mass Radio Network at criticalmassradio.net. This is Freak Radio Santa Cruz, operating at 101 FM illegally in the city of Santa Cruz at about 35, 37 watts. Of a mono signal on the FM dial. We're also streaming at freakradio.org. My name is Skidmark Bob, and I'll be your host for this first edition of the Critical Mass Radio Network launch, and I've been enjoying the programs thus far on this first edition of the Critical Mass Radio Network. We heard from Radioactive out of San Diego, California, and Kill Radio.
No,
awesome programming
well.
So far.
What it means is this.
We are an unlicensed micropower FM radio station, as I stated earlier, operated in Santa Cruz for the past 10 years.
Also, you must declare anything.
Started by a small group of Food Not Bombs activists in 1995. Constantly found that their activist message was disinformed by local corporate press. A collective was formed, a transmitter was obtained, and in March of 1995, Free Radio Santa Cruz went on the air at 89.3 FM, 15 watts of power. Moving to 96.3, to the 40 watts Dunifer model, then currently broadcasting at 101 FM, still on a Dunifer micro radio transmitter. That's Stephen Dunifer from Berkeley, Free Radio Berkeley. We're also streaming at freakradio.org. Free Radio Santa Cruz has a diverse history of original, independent, local programming, to say the least. Supported, maintained, and run by the programmers of Free Radio Santa Cruz, and supported by the citizens of Santa Cruz. Twice, the Santa Cruz City Council has passed resolutions in support of Free Radio Santa Cruz and our unlicensed transmissions. Free Radio Santa Cruz never acknowledged the authority of the FCC, or even while under the heat of several visits and notices of unlicensed radio operation. Here at Freak Radio 101 FM. We will never apply for a low-power FM license, since we resist government intrusion and censorship of our radio station. We would be exempt anyway because we've refused to go off the air for the past 10 years for the licensing process, even though our civil disobedience brought the low-power FM licensing to the table. Free Radio Santa Cruz former programmers have gone on to start and organize with other radio stations, unlicensed micropower radio stations, and other media projects such as Free Radio Austin, shut down several times, finally stopped with a court order against the primary operator, yet no prison or jail time. Free Radio Santa Cruz has never been, knock on wood, been raided in our 10 years of unlicensed radio broadcast. Free Radio Santa Cruz is a testament to the survival and growth of a community of an unlicensed micropower radio station. Once again, I want to welcome you to the first nationwide broadcast of the Critical Mass Radio Network, criticalmassradio.net. Here on Freak Radio Santa Cruz 101 FM and freakradio.org. By the way, Fridays usually here at Free Radio Santa Cruz, Fridays. We call them FCC Fridays because usually the FCC comes knocking on Fridays. We haven't been visited for a while. They usually come and visit on Fridays, but our last visit was on Thursday, May 13th, 2004. And that included two FCC agents with clipboards. They like clipboards for some reason. I don't know why they both have to have a clipboard, but they do have clipboards. About 10:30 in the morning, May 13th, FCC agents interrupted Captain Fred's World Cruise from Berkeley Liberation Radio, 104.1 FM, show we play every Thursday. And, wow, that was a phone. Okay, back on track here at Freak Radio. And I love this. We have 2 hours to mess around with. So we were visited by the FCC. Two FCC agents. And the weird thing was, I grabbed my mini disc recorder because I wanted to go talk to them, because obviously they weren't raiding us. They didn't have the U.S. Marshals in the riot squad apparel that they normally would do if they were doing a raid. It was just two guys with clipboards. And so I went up to talk to them, and I was recorded our conversation. And while I was talking to them, I had this weird, like, kind of weird feeling, interesting kind of Twilight Zone weirdness. I noticed two FCC agents were the same two FCC agents that I ran interference for 10 years previous. And, like, we all noticed it at the same time. It was rather weird. But anyway, we told them to go away. We're still broadcasting here. It is FCC Friday, so if we do get raided, you're going to probably hear a raid, unless they, well, we'll see what happens here. I got my gas mask. We're locked in the tombs, And we're going to rock with that last FCC visit here, the recording of that FCC visit. It was very chaotic at the time. Lots of gunfire. So here we go. Here, the FCC, actual FCC visit that we had here at Freak Radio Santa Cruz, Thursday, May 13th, 2004.
Freak Radio Santa Cruz, a brand new location. Got two FCC agents. Looks like David Dune is one of them. He's a FCC agent. And walking, they got clipboards.
How's it going? You guys all right? Is there a problem?
Yeah, there's an unlicensed broadcast station here, and we want to make sure that you stop operating.
There is?
Yo-ho, yo-ho, a pirate's life for me.
And how do you know this?
Because they don't have a license to operate.
And what's your name?
David Dune.
And what's your name?
David Hartshorn.
David Hartshorn. Do you have a card or any kind of identification so we even know who you are?
No.
Because he just showed up.
We showed him our identification.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't see it. How do I know? Okay.
So an even hijack, drink up me hearty yo-ho. Yo-ho, yo-ho, a pirate's life for me.
What is your name?
My name is Bob.
Bob.
Skidmark Bob.
Bob.
Skidmark Bob.
Bob.
Call me Skidmark if you want.
Okay.
So I'm just curious if there's any other problems, if there's interference problems.
No, it's just you don't have a license to operate the station then.
Okay.
1.1.
Okay.
You've talked to us. We've talked to you before.
I have?
Yes, you have.
Oh, okay. My name is Bob.
Bob.
I have? Skidmark Bob. Bob. I have? Skidmark Bob. Call me Skidmark.
Some say that pirates steal and should be feared and hated. I say we're victims of bad press. It's all exaggerated. We'd never stab you in the back. We'd never lie or cheat. We're just about the nicest guy you could ever want to meet.
Well, is there any problems at all? Like, is there
an unlicensed station?
That's all. That's the only reason why you're here, because it's unlicensed.
Continually operating after many warnings.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you. All right. That was FCC agent David Hartshorn and
Bob.
Bob.
Yes, yes. We are the guardians of freedom.
You are with us, the terrorists. That's what you got to know.
Arming to threaten the peace of the world.
You are with us, the terrorists. And that's what you got to know.
Like ticking time bombs set to go off without warning.
You are with us, the terrorists. And that's what you got to know.
Arming to threaten the peace of the world.
You are with us, the terrorists. And that's what you got to know.
Like ticking time bombs set to go off without warning.
You are with us, the terrorists. And that's what you got to know.
Arming to threaten the peace of the world.
You are with us, the terrorists. And that's what you got to know.
Like ticking time bombs set to go off without warning.
You are with us, the terrorists. And that's what you got to know.
Arming to threaten the peace of the world.
You are with us, the terrorists. And that's what you got to know. That's the answer to your question.
And now here's an interview
with Billionaires for Bush, done by Emily from Corporate Swine Radio, airing Mondays at 10 a.m.
Today on Corporate Swine Radio, we are fortunate to have with us Felonious Axe, the Minister of Musical Manipulation for the Billionaires for Bush. The billionaires, using their money to beat democracy at its own game, began their game of world economic domination in the early 70s, when they created think tanks like the Cato Institute, the American Enterprise Institute, and the Heritage Foundation. The billionaires paid scholars top dollar to come up with theories explaining why increasing their wealth was in everybody's interest, particularly with trickle-down economics, the idea that the rich getting richer will eventually help the poor. The billionaires, eager to maintain control of this corporate demockery, are campaigning hard for the Bush administration's re-election this year. Adamant to protect their monetary interests, their support of Bush's oil war, tax cuts for the rich, environmental destruction, and a growing deficit fuel their passion for the campaign. The billionaires claim that George has done a fantastic job so far. He set things up nicely for the long term, carefully appointing billionaire-friendly judges to the bench, redrawing congressional district boundaries to favor the Republicans, and letting the billionaires' companies count the votes at election time. In fact, say the billionaires, we think we're only one presidency away from winning our long battle to ensure that America will always be a place where corporations come first, where no billionaire is left behind, where social services are a freak of history. In the end, the public is convinced that this is the best way to run the country, because we own the ideas, we own the media, and best of all, we own the politicians. Please welcome to Corporate Swine Radio, Felonious Axe, the Minister of Musical Manipulation for the Billionaires for Bush. Good morning.
Good morning, Emily. Just listening to that whole litany of all the wonderful things we've done is just filling me with such pride.
It should. It should.
You know, I used to have to feel apologetic about all my wealth, but, you know, George Bush has really made us feel like we could stand out in the sun and hold our huge money bags out and just be proud and reach out to each other and just feel a sense of unity as we just consolidate everything. It's just a good feeling.
Well, talking about your sense of pride, could you tell us what you did yesterday to celebrate the 4th of July?
Oh, I had a very patriotic day yesterday. You know what I did? I took out all my no-bid contracts with, Iraq, and I reviewed them. It was really nice because I own a security firm, and we're getting a huge amount of tax dollars to go over there and help the military out with things like softening up prisoners so they can help us find those weapons of mass destruction that just didn't happen to turn up yet. So, we've got our own people doing it. You know, it's no longer the military. You know, it's actual private firms. And it's really nice because, you know, if you want to torture people, innocent people, do you want to trust some government agency like the Army to do it, or do you want to do it efficiently, cost-effectively, basically by hiring a private firm, by privatizing these kind of services? It's a wonderful opportunity because it's much more cost effective and much more efficient, and you get the pros in there to do it. And as you can see, they've been doing a smash up job.
Mr. Axe, could you maybe tell us a little bit about how the Billionaires for Bush formed and what your hopes and goals were?
Well, we wanted a president who, the old maxim, you got to dance with the one who brung you. We figured if we could get a president who would just do everything we wanted, you know, and just completely do our bidding and work tirelessly for us, even while he takes long vacations, we would really get a lot more of an opportunity to fully consolidate. You know, we've been consolidating for a long time, and you know, most of the presidents have been doing our bidding, programs that could be eliminated, so much wealth that is, you know, sitting untapped in the hands of poor people that we could squeeze out of them. And so we wanted to get together, and, you know, we backed George Bush last time, and this time we're really determined to keep it going, you know, and it's going very well for us because we, he's just, nobody has been better for us. No president has been able to consolidate more wealth in the hands of so few people. And we're out there. We've got 55 chapters all over the country now, and the word is spreading. Billionaires everywhere are coming out into the light of day and proclaiming, you know, we are here. Let's cheer for the nine figures each year that we clear. We're here. Let's cheer for the nine figures each year that we clear. It's exhilarating. And so, you know, we're going to be working hard, You know, Dick Cheney is, you know, with us. You know, he worked for Halliburton for a long time, and he's still working for Halliburton. It's really nice because the line, you know, between corporations and government has just, it's gone. We are the government. We are there. We are there writing laws. We are formulating policies. We are in the White House. We're in the Oval Office, and we are absolutely in the House. And it's just, it's a wonderful feeling to be in control. Because what's good for us is really good. It's for the best interest of everybody.
So you're talking about how excited you are that your club and your influence is spreading. But I'm wondering that I say club in the figurative sense, of course, but it's a very exclusive one. And if there are more and more billionaires, doesn't that mean less power and money for you? How do new initiates kind of enter?
Well, the thing is that there's a limited amount of money out there. But the thing is, a lot of it's untapped. You know, I mean, there are people making a living wage in places. Why should they have to make a living wage? Why can't we lower that a bit? And why can't we increase payroll taxes so that, you know, up to the first $66,000 that people make, maybe we could tax all of that so that everybody making under $66,000 a year is giving all their money to us? Why should, you know, there's all this opportunity out there. There are a lot of natural resources that haven't been privatized yet. So, you know, there is room for more billionaires at this point. There's not a huge amount of room, but I'm optimistic that if we can just take over everything and eliminate every single public service and get all the wealth from people. You know, there was a great relationship back in the old days when a really wonderful time, the Gilded Age, when you'd have a mining company and you'd own that mining company, and the workers would work, and any bit of wages they got, they gave to you for their housing and the company store, all the things they needed to live. And I think we could that was a great model. I think we could bring that back. And I think that will mean that there will be room for more billionaires at the top, you know, because we're expanding how many people are at the absolute bottom.
Yeah, that makes sense when you put it that way. Thanks.
Sure.
Hey, switching gears a little bit, you were talking about consolidation earlier. Can you talk a bit about your work in the media and with Clear Channel and maybe your relationship with Michael Powell of the FCC?
We have a very cozy relationship with Michael Powell at the FCC. He is another person who's really working for us. He's doing our bidding. You know, the changing of the media ownership rules means that, you know, we can own a lot more of the media, and we can own a lot more stations ourselves. Clear Channel, who is really a part of the billionaires, they've got 1,200 stations now, and they've been with George Bush from the absolute very beginning. Now, here's the thing. People say, well, this is unfair. You're eliminating diversity in the media. Now, let me just tell you, I don't know if you watch TV lately, but do you see how many people of color are on TV hawking products for us? So it's not like you're not hearing voices of people of color. And maybe they're talking about political diversity. Well, that's another story, because the thing is, you know, hearing a lot of different political views other than ours, I think makes people confused. I think it gives them feelings of doubt, and I think it's bad for their self-esteem. So we've cut all that stuff out.
You know, so you want to stick with just one message.
That's right. One message is simpler. And the other thing is, just imagine you're driving your car from Kennebunkport to Crawford. It's a long distance. And you want to be able to turn on the radio, and you want to make sure that you can hear the same country station every place you go, the same soft hits station everywhere you go, the same greatest hits of the 80s and 90s station everywhere you go, the same right-wing talk show hosts everywhere you go. You want to be able to turn on your radio and hear the exact same programming. That way, you don't get into an accident because you get confused because you're not hearing the same thing you're familiar with. I mean, we're really doing it for you. Consolidation is really our way of protecting you from the heinous influence of polka music. You know, I noticed that you're 101.1 FM.
Uh-huh.
Is that correct?
Yes.
Radio Free Santa Cruz. You know, that's a really nice piece of radio real estate, you know, right in the middle of the dial there. I don't know why we couldn't just privatize that and sort of buy it up and turn it into a greatest hits of the 80s and 90s station. Instead of hearing this sort of conflicting views and arguments against the billionaire agenda, they could turn it on and hear an 11-hour whamathon with George Michael. Don't you think that might be something that would make people more comfortable than the kind of radio programming that you're doing?
Well, it's interesting because we actually had that happen to us. We used to broadcast on 96.3
uh-huh.
for years and years, and a Salinas-based station called Air One, which is a Christian rock station.
Uh-huh.
aimed their signal directly at Santa Cruz and decided that, you know, they wanted to overpower us. And it was kind of a battle of the airwaves. And we decided, you know, to go ahead and move when, you know, when we moved locations onto a new part of the dial because we were sick of sharing the air with them.
Mm-hmm. Well, you can run, but you can't hide. We will eventually own that spot. So Christian rock, huh?
Yeah.
Well, you have to understand the fundamentalists play a very important role in pushing a billionaire agenda, even though they don't realize it. See, we run candidates who represent both our corporate view and their social view. You see what I'm saying? We run candidates who are homophobic and who are anti-abortion. You know, it's not that we care about those issues. They don't affect us at all monetarily, except for, you know, if this gay marriage thing goes through, I'm going to have to pay some more benefits to people, you know, people's spouses, which I really want to not have to do. But the thing is, by getting politicians who can pander to that constituency, because there's so many, many more of them than us, we can get people who really are going to push our agenda. And so we're sort of working in partnership with them. So, you know, I got more power to the Christian rock because it keeps the other part of the constituency happy while we get everything that we want in terms of privatization.
Right now we've got on the phone with us Clifford Tasner coming out of character.
Hello, Emily.
We had Felonious Axe, and
it was
great. Oh, yeah,
I saw him leaving out the other door.
It's kind of good to have you as, like, a normal person now.
It's actually fun having an evil alter ego.
I bet. I imagine it is.
You know, it's chilling, actually. There's a film that some friends of mine, Sally Marr and Peter Duda, are making. It's a children's film about how to address the issue of the Iraqi war to children. And they've interviewed all these children to ask them what they think about the war, and all these American kids saying they'd love to apologize to the Iraqi kids for what we're doing. But they've also interviewed a bunch of activists like me and asked us about what we're doing about the war. So they had me in character, being Felonious Axe. And then they had me out of character, and I recently saw a preview of their film. They're still editing the film and raising money to finish it, and they didn't include the clip of me as myself, which you're doing now, which is sort of nice. They just had me as Felonious Axe.
Yeah,
talking about how Iraq was a great opportunity, business opportunity for us, and, you know, and she said, well, what do you say to the children who are about to be bombed? And I said, well, duck, you know. And the thing is, it was actually chilling to see myself in character.
I bet. Yeah, I talked
to... really an evil bastard, you know.
I talked to Lucinda Regulations the other day, and she was telling me that that happens a lot in your media coverage, that you don't really get a chance to explain your tactics and your strategy. And so that's what I'd like to talk about here with you, and, like, getting a little more serious. Talk about, like, why you're using satire and street theater to get your message across rather than just protesting the typical way.
Well, I'm a composer, and I'm a writer, and I'm a political activist, and I started doing this when I was in the pro-choice movement defending women's clinics against attacks by fundamentalists, Operation Rescue People. This was about, I don't know, 12 years ago or 14 years ago. And I noticed that we were chanting all the time, and we were dead serious, and the fundamentalists were all singing. And their voices lasted longer than ours did. And I was also concerned about the fact that as much as we were doing something for justice and to protect women's lives, and they were sort of trying to oppress and take away women's rights, there was tension between us that we were rising to. We were being, you know, we were becoming like them. The capacity for aggression and violence I sort of noticed in myself. And so I started writing funny songs as a way of lessening the tension. So they would start singing What a Mighty God We Serve, and I would start singing What a Hearty Brunch We Serve. And so we would start doing performances, and we'd start doing satire. We'd start, you know, and it was great, because whenever we'd be singing at them, the tension would go down. We'd be laughing, and they couldn't muster the sort of hatred that they were trying to muster to create tension in the face of our scorn and our laughter and our humor. And so this became something that I really loved doing. And I was getting ready to write songs for the 2000 election, and I wrote a few. I at this point, what I was doing was song parodies. I write my own songs, and most of the songs you played today were things I wrote myself. There were a couple parodies in there. But for 2000, I was just writing song parodies, because you show up at a political rally and you hand out lyric sheets and you can have 1,000 people singing with you, because it's songs they all know. So, you know, our first CD has My DNA to the tune of YMCA and Where Enron to the tune of Mandy and stuff like that.
Toys for the World.
Joy to the World becomes Toys for the World, about child sweatshop labor. And I wrote a couple of these songs, and somebody at Rainforest Action Network said, you know, I've got this friend, Andrew Boyd, who's got this group called Billionaires for Bush. He's put together, actually at the time it was Billionaires for Bush or Gore. And, you know, you should give him a call. So I gave him a call, and I sang him some of my stuff, and he said, well, this is great. Why don't you write us a song? So I took the Caissons theme and wrote Billionaires for Bush or Gore. and which you recently heard on this station. The first, one of the first songs you played was Billionaires for Bush's War, because I'm shameless about reusing material that I've recorded and just writing new lyrics when new situations come up. And when they came out, the Billionaires came out for the Democratic Convention protests, I had a marching band, and I had a choir waiting for them, and, you know, had written all these songs and then arranged them for marching band. So this became, I sort of became the Billionaires music guy. And after the election was over, people had such a good time seeing us before the election that people would call us, they'd be having a police brutality protest. So I wrote Prison Cells to the tune of Jingle Bells, which is also on the first album.
Right.
And, you know, and then somebody would be doing, I got a call from a woman at Claremont Colleges. They were trying to prevent the building of a biotech facility. So we became, we were the Billionaires for Private Prison Profits. Then we became the Billionaires for Biotech Bonanzas. And I wrote a song called My DNA to the tune of YMCA. So whenever there was some kind of event, people would contact me and say, could you guys perform? And then I'd write a new song for it. And we'd tailor our material specifically to whatever political issue it was. So we've been doing this in L.A. as the Billionaires for More Media Mergers. When Pacifica was under threat of attack by the corporate interest, we were the Billionaires for More Media Mergers, and I wrote material for that. And whenever, you know, so Billionaires for, we became Billionaires for Military Megabucks with the Iraqi War. So we've been doing it, and people like it a lot. It really is, it's a great thing because we can say things in satire that you can't say earnestly and be taken seriously, I guess. Satire, you know, I guess I think back to the 60s and sort of the ethos was one of sincerity. You know, you'd sing a protest song about how bad the bad people are and how good and righteous we are. And, you know, that was sort of, people were much more earnest and sincere. It's a dark, cynical time. And
I
think this kind of thing appeals to people because we can say the truth. We can even be more strident by being funny about it. I can talk about mercury being a great thing rather than a bunch of protesters saying, you know, it's really bad, they're poisoning us with this stuff. So we do the funny thing, and I you know, I go to a lot of rallies, and I really, you hear a lot of really great speeches by really earnest, sincere people, and I have lots of love for them for fighting the good fight and being sincere about it. But I feel like after 10 speeches, people glaze over. And so it's really fun when we can come in and do our thing, and I think it wakes everybody up. And some of the same ideas, we're saying the same stuff, and I think in some ways people take it home with them because they're chuckling about it.
So you're in L.A., Andrew's in New York, and you seem to be nationwide now, and you mentioned you have 55 chapters. I wanted you to maybe talk about what people can do to start their own chapters if we wanted
to
Santa Cruz.
Well, you can go to our website, billionairesforbush.com, and you can actually you can sign up. There's a woman named Iona Biga Yacht, who is she's the field organizer, a very nice woman named Alice Meeker, actually, and she's setting up chapters. And the whole idea is that every time Bush or Cheney or Rumsfeld shows up in town, the billionaires are there also. So when the media comes out, there's somebody pointing out that this administration is really, really good for the wealthy corporate interests as opposed to everybody else. And, you know, the media like it. They think it's really funny. They will come out to our stuff. The New York Times has written about us 7 times already.
Wow.
You know, it would cost a lot of money to take out an ad in the New York Times, but, you know, we're doing our street stuff, and people just, it's really fun.
When enemies go underground, drop some mini nukes around.
Contractors are out to show the world it's fine to abrogate our treaties and produce a brand new product line of mini nukes.
Bunker bombs.
Mini nukes.
Bunker bombs.
We'll equip you soon if you can pony up the needed cash. You drop a few of these and turn your foes to subatomic ash with mini nukes. Aside your qualms and buy some mini nukes.
Bunker bombs.
Boom, ba 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 boom.
Military budgets haven't really seemed to keep up pace. We'll maximize our profits when we start a brand new weapons race with mini nukes.
Bunker bombs.
Mini nukes.
Bunker bombs.
When enemies go
a traveling community of 50 or maybe by now 70 people. We're starting to add people as we approach New York. We're living together, sleeping in tents, in church basements, things like that. Food is being cooked for us by Seeds for Peace. We make all our decisions collectively, and we walk 10 or 15 miles most days.
You are listening to the Critical Mass Radio Network.
People drive by and blow their horns and wave and yell wonderful things. And a few people drive by and hit their horns and yell unpleasant things.
We did a walkthrough of a Walmart where a group of us went and masked up and chanted such things as "while you're shopping, bombs are dropping," and
you sang a song, right?
Yeah, we sang David Robick's "Oppositional Defiant Disorder" at the top of our lungs walking through Walmart, and we actually got very well received by even the Walmart employees.
Nice.
Remember my record label, teenager though he is, he joined every vile records in the indie music biz. His parents didn't like such turns of events, so they called up a couple of thugs, send him back to Utah, lock him up and pump him full of drugs. They say he's got problems with authority, yeah, this is what they claim, and their psychiatric analysis has even got a name. Oppositional defiant disorder, I think I got it too. Oppositional defiant disorder, he's sick and so are you. If you think George Bush is a moron and Tony Blair's a liar, if you fantasize about setting your local Walmart on fire, if you don't like Tom Brokaw and you think he's full of it, if you feel a Rush Limbaugh punching bag might be kind of fun to hit, if bombing other countries makes you feel appalled, you have got a problem and this is what it's called. Oppositional defiant disorder, I think I got it too. Oppositional defiant disorder, he's sick and so are you. If you think school is boring and your teacher is a fool, if you don't like your congressman and you call him a corporate tool, if you were not standing to sing Save the Queen, if you turned down hamburgers and ate rice and beef, we've got a diagnosis no matter whether you agree. Just do what the doctors tell you, thank God for psychiatry. Oppositional defiant disorder, I think I got it too. Oppositional defiant disorder, he's sick and so are you.
Some of us are involved in ways of living that create an alternative to this whole system. Our website probably has lots of links on it, right?
Absolutely.
DNC2RNC, and that's a numeral 2.org. So if people want to plug in kind of locally where they are, they might look up the website and look for links.
Also on the website, India Media is with us, and they're doing a really good job of videoing the daily activities and editing them at night and updating, you know, the website.
And that would be indymedia.org, right?
Yeah, indymedia.org, and that all also has links to a lot of local indie media.
It is the dawn of the 21st century. Globally, the oppressors are waging a war against the oppressed. The first casualty of war is truth, and the oppressors have big guns, money, power, and a stranglehold on the media. But we can fight back. We have our own weapons. Vision, creativity, and indie media. Indie media was born in the clouds of tear gas that filled the streets of Seattle in 1999. It has since grown to a network of over 120 media centers worldwide. Indie media's stories come out of the trenches, from the mouths of the frontline fighters. They come from those who resist and are rising up. They come from you.
We have the fire, we have the cry.
The spirit.
shouldn't come from money.
Find out what's really going on. Break through the corporate veil.
They will not tell our story well. They will lie.
Fuck the corporate media.
Tell your story yourself through indie media. On the web, with video, radio, or print. Choose your weapon and act. Empower yourself and others. Fight for truth.
Eventually the truth, even though it's beaten down, covered up, will rise to the top.
Indie media. Because corporate media is always out of focus.
The power comes from the people, from you and I, from the bottom up.
Yeah, it's going to be spectacular.
Because it's not just us, there's a lot of groups that are connecting with us from New York City, including Critical Mass and many, many others.
Yeah, Critical Mass, the Green Block. Time's Up is the name, yeah, of the Critical Mass. We have some coordination with the Panthers in New York, and also just many other different local communities of color and local activist groups.
Dominate and how to actually let the leadership emerge from lots of different people, and we're getting better at it.
I think it's gone very well. We're really showing, I think, to the world that an anarchist community can truly exist, and we're living proof of it walking down this road.
The age range goes from 17 years old to 66.
I think we're definitely moving along and making decisions without anyone in a position of authority, which is awesome.
We also have people with us with some disabilities, and so as a community, we're having to figure out how to take care of them, you know, not exclude them or, you know, keep it possible for them to stay with us, which is a wonderful thing to have to learn.
My message to get out would be to show people that there is another way, that there aren't only two choices you can make. Whether Democrat or Republican, there is something else, and we're living proof that it's happening, that it is possible.
And yes, I am an anarchist, and I do organize, yes, and I do oppose this government, and I do oppose the war, and I do oppose free trade, and what are you going to do about it?
Um,
What the next one?
Critical Mass Radio. www.criticalmassradio.net. World Mass Broadcast here today. And we are Freak Radio Santa Cruz. That was a piece done by Bradley, who does the Indie Media Newswire every Monday at 1 p.m. Indie Newswire with Bradley. Audio collage of folks in the DNC to RNC, Portland Indie Media, Call to Media Arms, along with music from David Rovics and Against Me. You could download that whole piece there, that 10-minute piece, at santacruz.indymedia.org. We're enjoying the music of people like us. Awesome sampler, Vicky Bennett from England. Go to peoplelikeus.org, download her whole entire album, Abridged Too Far, which includes a song called Dolly Parton. Sampling Amy Goodman there. Hope she doesn't sue her. I'm just kidding. All right, we're going to continue on here with Critical Mass Radio Network. First broadcast. We got a lot of stuff for you that our programmers have put together. A lot of them are working today, so they can't make it in. Feel free to call in to our studio, 831-427-3772 is the 831 area code. 427-FRSC, 831, Santa Cruz, California, USSA, America, caca. Stay tuned, stand by for this. I don't know what it is. I'm just going to push this button.
This is Earth Mommer, and you're listening to Critical Mass Radio Network on Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.1 FM. And now, here's George with an interview with Amy Goodman from Peace Talks, which airs Sundays from 3 to 6 p.m.
So you've seen and heard some pretty horrifying things as a journalist. How have you coped and maintained a hopeful attitude, not gotten burned out?
I'm inspired by the people I cover, by the level of activism there is in this country and around the world, by independent media. Places like Freak Radio is absolutely amazing that you've gone on as long as you have and you have the community support. And it's all done because of your just tremendous desire and goodwill and passion for independent voices, a forum for other voices. And we especially need them now in a time of invasion, occupation, and selections. We need peace and elections.
And is that what you mean in your book by going where the silence is? Do you mean finding the diversity that isn't in the mainstream media right now?
Yes, I think it's the role of all journalists to go to where the silence is, to go to where people are not being heard and broadcast their voices or quote them in the print press. And that is where the mainstream media has fallen so short. I think media in this country has reached an all-time low. You look at what has happened with the invasion and the whole process of embedding, where hundreds of reporters are embedded in the front lines of troops. What about having them embedded in Iraqi communities and hospitals and the peace movement around the world? Then we'd get an accurate picture of what was happening, the effects of war. Jeremy Scahill and I were interviewing Aaron Brown of CNN, and asked him, where are the pictures of war? And he said they were tasteless. And why aren't you bringing us voices of the peace movement? He said he admits CNN came late to the peace movement, but once the war is on, those voices are irrelevant. Really? How would the Vietnam War, how would it have ended? And now that same group of people who were beating the drums for war, beginning to think that they're a small group of pundits that sit in one room, and I can tell you it doesn't look like freak radio here. And the backdrop just shifts through the day. NBC, ABC, CBS, they say the same thing. These people who know so little about so much, and now they're wringing their hands. How did we get it so wrong? Well, why not ask someone who got it right? Someone who's questioning the so-called intelligence a year ago, and invite them into these studios.
You say in your book that the media have a responsibility to show the true face of war, and you say it is bloody, it is brutal. Real people die, women and children are killed, families are wiped out, villages are razed. You also say it's basically this old house goes to war, about the mainstream media, a talk show featuring our lethal hardware and the men who admire it most. Can you kind of comment on that? I mean, you already have, but maybe you could say a little more about that aspect.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the networks during the Persian Gulf War. CBS was owned by Westinghouse. NBC was owned by General Electric. They were two of the major nuclear weapons manufacturers in the world, making most of the parts for most of the weapons in the Persian Gulf War. I mean, was it any accident? What we saw was a military hardware show. Now with the invasion of Iraq, you have the Pentagon ecstatic, because they never dreamed they would be as successful as they were in controlling and shaping the media's message. You have the embedding process, which Victoria Clark, who hailed from Hill and Knowlton and became the Pentagon spokesperson, called a spectacular success, you know, really getting the message out of the Pentagon. My goodness, I don't think you're going to question it when your life is in the soldiers' hands. And then you have the video war game look of the U.S. coverage of war, and that is the gray, grainy images with the target over them. And you add to that the playing cards. Now, this went beyond the Pentagon's wildest imagining. They weren't making them for the soldiers to find these Iraqi officials, you know, the 55 Iraqi officials. They were making them for the press. And now when the press talks about one of these officials, it doesn't just show the picture within the playing card, it shows the whole playing card. Now, what is a kid to think? Video war games, playing cards. War must be fun. No, I don't think that war is fun. It is barbaric. It is not an answer to conflict in the modern age.
Do you feel that the corporate media contributed to this war? We've been talking about some of the coverage during the war, but before the war started, do you think that the corporate media contributed to the fact that it even happened in the first place?
Absolutely. I mean, they were part of the rollout for war. The government needed the press, you know, because everyone has a sort of sneaky suspicion that governments don't always tell the truth. And they need a media that either validates what they're saying or they don't need them to criticize. But that's exactly what the press didn't do, criticize. They simply were conveyor belts for the lies of the administration, like issues of weapons of mass destruction.
And what are the reasons for this? You mentioned in your book that there is quite a relationship between the media personalities and the powerful. You call it the, quote, access of evil. Can you talk about this, give some specific examples of the connections?
Well, I don't think that the trade-off is worth trading access for truth. But that's so often what the corporate media does. In order to be the lucky reporter chosen for the next leak, lie or not, you don't want to be critical of the administration. We call it the access of evil because it so violates the basic tenets of good journalism. I mean, there's a reason why our profession is enshrined in the Constitution, why it's protected by the U.S. Constitution, the only profession that is, because it is a check and balance on government. It is essential to the functioning of a democratic society.
Tune in to Peace Talks Sunday from 3 to 6 here at Free Radio Santa Cruz to hear in-depth interviews about current issues on such subjects as Haiti, Venezuela, Colombia, the death penalty, the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. That's Peace Talks, 3 to 6 p.m. on Sunday afternoons. Interviews with professors, authors, activists, and others here at 101.1 FM or on the web at freakradio.org.
In darkness, we do what we can. In daylight,